This is 95.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the DGDG.com studios in downtown San Francisco in crystal clear FM. Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
7:01, Raider fans, we'll talk with one of your former guys, Kirk Morrison, at 7:30. We'll get his thoughts on this deadline looming for teams to sign their franchise guys to long-term deals. Von Miller is one of those players. Kirk Morrison coming up at 7:30. Our next guest starred at the University of Colorado. He's one of the best golfers of all time, a three-time U.S. Open champ. It's our pleasure to welcome Hale Irwin to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Hale, good morning. It's great to have you back on the show.
Great. It's a wonderful day. I'm down here in the desert and just waiting for it to cook up a little bit.
Oh, well, I can guarantee you it's probably going to cook up a little bit, so hopefully you'll have a good day with the sun, Hale. But I got to ask you this, because you've been in these situations before. What went through your mind when you saw that putt by Phil when he was going for the ultimate record of 62 in the opening round lip out?
You know, we have a lot of those things happen in our careers. We always remember those. We forget those that lip in. So I think it's natural to assume that, Phil thought he had that putt. It looked awfully good. It was an awfully good speed. But, that's just the way things go. There's a lot said, just as we are right now, about the missed putt. But, boy, he had to have made some putts, too. So it's high drama, certainly.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Hale Irwin with Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Now, you had great success in the U.S. Open. You were a runner-up in the Open Championship back in 83 at Birkdale. What is the big difference in terms of all the other majors you play, preparation-wise, getting ready for the Open?
Well, when you're getting ready to play for the Open Championship, A, you've got to factor in time travel. If you're going to go over and be a serious contender, you have to go over a bit early, get adjusted to the time change, get adjusted to the food, the sleep, the way things work at a local destination like we have here at Troon. Secondly, you do have different conditions. You're not going to find this weather that we're seeing today anywhere in the United States for a U.S. Open, for instance. So you have to be ready for those conditions, and the only way to do that is to get over there, look at the bunkers, the size of the lips. You have to get adjusted to the sand. There's just a lot of things you have to do. The ball is not necessarily played high from A to B in the air. Sometimes you have to chase it along the ground as well. And those are just some things you have to adjust to.
Hale, how do you see the weekend going for Phil Mickelson? Is he going to be able to hold on to this lead, or who else do you see possibly coming from behind to catch him?
Well, Henrik Stenson's right there, and he's had a good year. He's a great player. Phil has backed up, as he said today. He backed up today's round or yesterday's round with a very solid round today, stress-free, as he called it. But I don't know how the course is playing right now, other than as I watch it here on television and see the wind blowing, and if the winds continue, as I've heard that they're going to over the next several days. I think it's critical for those guys this afternoon in the second half of the draw to get out and at least stay within five or six, seven shots of Phil and Henrik, because if you get too far away, then it becomes a numbers game. Are there just too many guys you have to pass to catch the leaders?
With Sergio, everyone's saying this guy was going to be the next Tiger and he's going to be that guy. What do you think we'll see him? Is he going to be able to compete in this one?
Well, Sergio is a great ball striker. Perhaps the thing has led him down through the years has been his putting. He's got the typical Spanish great touch with chipping. So I think it's a confidence factor with Sergio. He seems to have gathered himself together. He's becoming not the young kid. I played with him when he was first introduced to America way back when in Medina. And he was just a very young man. His father was following him around, and he has matured greatly since then, has become a world-class player. He could come alive, but he's going to have to do it very, very quickly. The years are running out, although there's some guy that we're talking to that won a championship at age 45. I think it's possible for him to get himself together and win. And these kinds of conditions, the ball strikers are the guys to look for. You just can't flail it out there somewhere and expect to play well.
Three-time United States Open champion Hale Irwin joining Chad, Joe, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. Hale, looking into the future, next 5 years, which of the following four golfers do you think will have won the most majors over the next 5 years? Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth.
well, why don't you pick out guys that are just really not on top of their game? Well, that was a loaded question.
Yeah. Does it feel as if Dustin Johnson getting one under his belt might open the floodgates?
Well, Dustin hits the ball so far, but you're talking about Jason Day hits it far too. And, you know, Jordan Spieth has been such a phenom at such a young age. I think he's very, very capable. He's got confidence. He's got the game. I wonder if he didn't. It's a race. When you're talking about a career, it's a race. And he may have gone out in that first mile or two and really put the pedal to the metal and worn himself out a bit. I don't know over the next 4 or 5 years if he can continue that chase. Jason is just now hitting his prime. You know, at his age and his strength and the way he's committed to it, I would have to say that it's going to be Jason or Rory doing that. Rory, I see, has just gone back to right-hand low rather than left-hand low with his putting. So he's obviously struggling a little bit with that. But if he corrects that, I think you're going to have to see one of those two guys be the championship leader at the end of 5 years.
One of the biggest headlines for the sport this year has been golf's return to the Olympics, specifically in Rio de Janeiro. But the negative side of this is a lot of golfers from around the world have decided to opt out and not play. If you were in your prime right now and had the opportunity to play in Rio, given the circumstances and the situation, would you go?
A tough question. I think you have to look at it from the Zika virus. You know, is that going to contribute to one's family planning? And I think that's a very serious question that you have to look at on an individual basis. But maybe as big a question as that is, the government itself, the country itself, is not sending out great positive vibes. You know, at the airport, a sign says, "Welcome to hell." Then they're saying it's going to be a financial disaster. Well, if you're looking at that country for another part of the world, you're thinking, boy, I've got a long ways to go, and do I really want to go down there? And maybe the third question is, why is the format just a 72-hole format? They could have done something really different to make this a team event. Most of our gold medals, silver, bronze, it's a team that collects those medals. Why didn't they do something that was a little bit more dramatic in terms of just rather than just another 72-hole tournament?
Wow. Three-time U.S. Open champion, Hale Irwin with Chad Joe and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Hale, we really appreciate your time and talking golf with you. We think you're a pretty cool guy, my man.
Well, thank you. Sometimes I wonder. All I'm going to do is step outside here in about 30 minutes. I won't be cool anymore.
Well, enjoy the sun down in the desert and enjoy the rest of the Open Championship. We'll talk soon, Hale.
All right, great. Nice talking to you guys.
Hale freaking Irwin, man. Three U.S. Opens. That's not an easy tournament.
He was a two-sport star at Colorado, all Big Eight, defensive back for the football team.
The Big Eight.
Yes, the Big Eight back in the day, and won an NCAA championship in golf at Colorado before he moved on to win three U.S. Opens.
Did you think it'd be possible to do an interview about golf and not mention Tiger Woods? Profound, huh?
Yeah.
I think what's cool, though, is guys like Hale, they look around, and I think they appreciate not just Tiger, but all the young golfers now. Like, you mentioned all the names to him. He's like, come on.
Sports loaded. Good players. Sports loaded. And here, this is the thing that it's just so – I feel it's so lazy on behalf of the golf media at times. Every time there's a win, when it was Rory. Rory had that year a couple years back. I think he won two majors. Immediately, it was the era of Rory.
Absolutely.
In the Rory era. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
The following year, Jordan Spieth comes out red hot. You know what happens? We're in the Jordan Spieth era. Then Jason Day wins, and we're talking about a big three. Then Dustin Johnson wins, and now it's a big four. Then Ricky Fowler's hot, and it's a big five. It doesn't need a classification. Just enjoy it.
It's
just
like that question.
Enjoy the fact that there are several quality golfers who are out there competing and winning.
It's like, who's the next MJ question?
Just let that go.
Yeah.
It's just lazy. It's always someone's new era. By Sports Illustrated standards, the Rory McIlroy era lasted about 45 days.
That's it.
And the Jordan Spieth era came to an end pretty close, too. Then you get the people who, after Jordan Spieth botched the Masters this year by many standards, will Jordan Spieth ever win another major? Well, what is he, like 24, 22, with two majors under his belt already? Yeah, I'm pretty confident he's going to be okay.
Yeah, with Rory, it was a simple fact. Then people gave him an excuse because of the fact he switched clubs. So they were thinking, okay, he's going to get a swing back, switch, you know. So sometimes it's a lot of little things that go on behind the scenes. But you're right. Enjoy it. Golf's got some competition. They got three, four, five young guys that are playing well, striking the ball well, and that's what you want. You want competition.
My brother's about to take a lot of my money. I'm meeting him and my father up in Oregon at Bandon Dunes in August. I haven't played at all. I'm going to get shredded up there.
You are.
And the youngin, he's slick. He makes it sound like he doesn't play. He did this to me the last time we went up to Oregon. He just shows up and all of a sudden he's got a new game.
And he wants you too. Don't think they're not gearing for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, is the other brother going to show up and caddy for all of you?
No. No. That's no. That was tried a few years ago. It did not work well.
Well, we'll see if Phil Mickelson can hold on to this lead and pull it off over the course of the next couple of days. We got more on that coming up in an hour. But Nick Saban took Paul Feinbaum to the woodshed, so much so that Feinbaum got crying MJ'd. We'll get Lowe's thoughts next. 712 Chad Joe and Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
A's reliever Sean Doolittle joins us coming up in studio at 9 to preview the second half of the season for the A's. Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
7:16, we'll talk NFL football with former Raider Kirk Morrison at 7:30. Time for a little college football. SEC Media Days, and the big news coming out this week is Nick Saban's confirmation that star tackle Cam Robinson and defensive back Lawrence Hootie Jones are unlikely to be suspended, but will rather face internal discipline after arrests on drug and weapons charges in Louisiana. Robinson was charged with possession of a controlled dangerous substance and illegal possession of a stolen firearm, while Jones was charged with possession of a controlled dangerous substance. Now, the district attorney chose not to prosecute, and Saban has decided that both players will still have a chance to compete against USC in the season opener on September 3rd if they continue their internal discipline, which includes weekly drug tests, drug counseling, yada, yada, yada. Now, that led to a little bit of a heated discussion between Paul Feinbaum and Nick Saban at the media days. Take a listen.
Coach, to a lot of people, that's a very bad look for your program, that you're working out internally but not suspending them publicly for an important game against Southern Cal. How do you answer those critics?
Well, I don't really care to answer the critics because I'm going to do what's right for the players. And if the players really did anything that wrong, they would have got charged with something. All right. So,
well, I mean,
that's debatable
if you listen to what the district attorney said in his simply unintelligent response.
Didn't say what all was like. There were four people in the car. Why did the two football players get arrested and the other guys not get arrested? All right. There's no law about concealed weapons in Louisiana. Is that right, Marcus?
That is correct.
You're from Louisiana. All right. So why did they search the car just because there was a gun on the seat?
Do you think they were persecuting the football players?
I don't. There's just a lot of questions there that are reasons that there weren't charges brought against these guys. Now, we're going to do every. Now, do we condone the behavior? No. All right. But you're innocent until proven guilty in this country, regardless of whether you get convicted in the media or not, which is what you're doing to these players.
I'm not convicting anyone. I'm just asking you why you are not going to suspend Cam Robinson for the Southern
Cal.
Because
I'm not going to convict him in the public. And you said that I was going to get criticized by you and the public and the media because I'm not going to suspend him. And I don't really care about that. It's the end of the conversation.
That courtesy of ESPN, Nick Saban and Paul Feinbaum. Lowe, what's your reaction to Coach Sabes there?
I thought it was good. I thought he had a good reaction. I thought that he took him to school. I mean, he just let him know, hey, look, if they're in another state, maybe it would have been conviction. But he said, hey, the guys in New Orleans, in Louisiana, say Louisiana, it's not against the law to have a firearm. There was four guys in the car. He said, does he condone it? He said, no, I don't condone it. He makes the guys go do the ride along. They have to go drug tests and do all those things. And he wanted to say early, if you continue to listen to the interview, he also said, he goes, I have two kids. And he goes, I'm not proud of everything they've done. And he goes, everything they've done hasn't been perfect. He said, but you know what? They're still my kids. He's talked about, you know, kids are in college. They're adolescents. They're smoking, doing drugs. He goes, is it wrong? Probably, he said, but kids are in college and everyone wants to just hold everyone to a certain standard. And he goes, but I'm not going to throw him away. So I condone him for just letting him know that, hey, this is how the school is going to handle it, and I'm not going to condemn them publicly. I'm not going to condone it, but I'm not going to condemn them. So I thought it was great.
Cam Robinson and Hootie Jones, these are the two that were involved in this, two Alabama football players that were involved in this altercation we're talking about. Cam Robinson's an offensive tackle who's likely a likely first-round pick next year. Hootie Jones, he's on the rise. His prominence isn't on Robinson's level, but it has potential. Remember those two names, Cam Robinson and Hootie Jones, because if 3, 4, 5, 8 years down the road, these guys are out getting arrested, think of this moment and think about how they're being enabled. I understand college kids make mistakes. I made a ton of them. But I also face consequences, and I had to learn from the consequences. And when you continue to allow football players, athletes, anybody of privilege, treating them with privilege, not putting them in a situation where they have to face any repercussions, or punishment whatsoever for stuff like this, then they'll continue to think they can operate above the law. Why do you think Justin Blackmon continued to have run-ins with DUIs? Because in Stillwater, which is where he went, Oklahoma State, they let him do whatever he wanted. He kept getting away with it. So he figures he goes to the pros and it's going to be the same situation. That's how it works. The more entitled you are at a younger age, that becomes ingrained in you. And you feel you can get away with whatever you want down the road. Someone will always be there to sweep it under the rug because you're important. Cam Robinson is extremely important to Nick Saban because it helps Nick Saban win national championships and make money for that program. Everyone in Alabama wants to see Cam Robinson and Hootie Jones play, so they'll do what it takes to get him on the field. And I understand the youth make mistakes. I'm not saying you need to throw the book at these guys. Absolutely not. But they're not facing any repercussions whatsoever. So if you hear these names 3, 5, 6, 8 years down the road and they're getting in trouble, it's linked to the law, think of this moment and how they were enabled. And then we'll talk about how it was on the people who had an opportunity to discipline them. Maybe it could have been prevented down the road had these guys been able to learn some sort of lesson from this altercation.
Lo, are they being enabled?
No, not at all. Because there was four people in the car. What happened to the other two guys? What happened to other two people? So were they enabled? They didn't get arrested, but the two football players did. Are they being enabled when they still have to go through drug testing? Are they being enabled? They're still going through ride-alongs. They're making them go to do community service. So I think the Saban is a guy that's going to be a man that's going to stick by his word. So I don't think they're being enabled. Does the fans and everyone want to see these two guys play football? Absolutely. Does things happen? Does people get privileges? Absolutely. But if the situation that arises in this situation, you had four people, we don't even know those other two kids' names, but all of a sudden you identify the football player. So the regular people, it's okay, but the football players, so they are going through some discipline actions, meaning that they're going to learn about working with people, learn about drugs, drug testing, doing those things. They wanted to, if you keep listening to the interview, that's another guy asked Nick Saban, he goes, well, don't you think the NCAA should have rules that everyone, so if something happens, it's universal, that every university, so they follow policy, so if everyone get in trouble, it's the same thing. And Nick Saban was good. He goes, well, NCAA, it does. He said if a kid get caught for smoking weed, he said they're out for 6 weeks. He said, but if they get caught by the school, it ain't going to be 6 weeks. It's a lesser, it's not that. But the NCAA has a rules that they guideline, but the schools individually guidelines different. So There is rules for the NCAA, and there's rules that sometimes like the coaches and that administration and those organizations, those schools have, that's different than the NCAA. So I think these guys are not necessarily being – I don't think they're being enabled. I think that you looked at the situation, four people, only two was arrested and two weren't.
If they opened with Akron, they'd be suspended. They're opening with USC. They're not being suspended. That's really all you need to know about the situation. It'd be easy to suspend them and send the message when you know you're going to win the game. You're playing USC. It's all hands on deck.
Because, well, you see the public perception here. People look at this and say, there's Nick Saban. There's Alabama.
Of course.
Big-time football players getting privilege that other people wouldn't get.
I think that's where the perception is. I don't think it's reality in every case. I think that, yes, there is a lot of things that athletes do and a lot of things that get swept, and I get it. In this particular case, I think that you had four kids in a car. Smoking, don't condone it, but two guys got arrested. And that's why Nick Saban said, the reason why things were thrown out because they identified who the two football players were. Two other people, we don't even know their names, but nothing happened. Didn't even get arrested. But so it just goes to show that, hey, look, I'm not saying that they picked on the football players, but I'm saying, and then Nick Saban didn't just say, okay, so since they didn't get arrested, didn't necessarily break any laws, so am I still going to make them go through a drug because he doesn't want them smoking? Or he's going to make them drug tests? Yes. So now if these guys were chronic smokers, now they get drug tested, so they're going to be suspended. So now what they've done is put themselves in a program. So now they have to get drug tested weekly. Now they're going to different things that they have to do, the ride-alongs with the cops, and they had to also doing some community service. So I don't know if they've been necessarily just got off easy. I think that you are trying to educate and try to help these guys go through a situation where you're making them go through ride-alongs, you're making them get in the community, you're making them understand their drugs and making them test. So I think that you are putting standards in place for these two young men.
We got more football we're going to discuss next. Former Raider Kirk Morrison is going to jump on board. We'll get his thoughts on the franchise tag deadline day. We'll get his thoughts on the Raiders as we get ready for a brand new football season. 726, Chad Jones Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
MLB Network's Brian Kenny joins us coming up at 8:30 to discuss his book, Ahead of the Curve. Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
729, our next guest, a former Raider, 8-year NFL vet, and he's now with the NFL on Fox and Fox Sports Radio. On Twitter, at Kirk Morrison. Kirk Morrison joins Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Kirk, good morning. Thanks for coming back on the show.
No, anytime, fellas. Anytime. How are we doing today?
Oh, very well. And, of course, a lot of people excited for football season here in the Bay Area. You look at the AFC West right now, Denver, Kansas City, and Oakland. Everything seems to be jumbled up on the top. Do you think the Raiders are primed or prepared to be able to take that next step and challenge for a division crown and maybe get back in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think everybody sees that. The expectations are definitely there. Obviously, for what they've done in the offseason, you know, with all the signings, they had a draft class, free agency, all of that. But I think now is a time where this football team has to just start from the ground up, you know, still have a foundation, set that, and then just go out there and win games and let everything kind of just happen. I think when you go on with the expectations of, okay, this is a playoff team now, or they need to be 10-6, 11-5. I think they just have to build off last year and still come in with the underdog mentality. I look at the AFC West as a wide open division this year, just because, you mentioned Peyton Manning is no longer there. The Denver Broncos, you know, have a different starting quarterback this season. You look at Kansas City, they'll be a team that I think will be in contention as well. And San Diego, and Lorenzo knows this, man. I won't put down Phillip Rivers up for no reason at all. I mean, that guy still, I think, one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. But, you know, for me, I think it's just for the Raiders to come in and just really, really keep the underdog mentality of last year and feel like you have not arrived.
I agree with you. I think that those are the three teams in contention. Now, Kirk, when you think about the Raiders and the way that they went out in free agency and addressing the defense and offense, is this team good enough if Carr doesn't – what is Carr going to have to do? Does he need to go out and win games, or do you think – this team's good enough this year that if he doesn't turn the ball over, they'll be good enough to win?
Yeah, you know what, Lo, he's in that same category as I'm putting in Derek and Teddy Bridgewater. It's guys who we saw in year one. You said you saw the talent. You said, okay, these guys can play. And in year two, you saw a little bit of ups and downs, but you saw improvement. Well, this is year three, and I can tell you, and you can tell this, say that, you know, speak to this as well. Year three in the National Football League is where the light bulb goes off. It is either you get it or you don't. And I think this is that year that Derek can take off. And it's really about what does, you know, this team allow him to do? What do they allow him to do as far as the offense? Because defensively, I think they now have the depth. That's the one thing that they've never had is depth, meaning that, hey, a frontline starter goes down, hey, the next guy goes in, and there's a big drop-off. They don't have that drop-off now. The competition is there, especially defensively, to the point where I think when you look at the offensive side, Derek and the guys can really score points, but you don't have to put the game in Derek's hands. I think really because of the mentality of Jack Del Rio playing for him. I played with the guy named David Garrard when Jack Del Rio was our head coach in Jacksonville. Very similar. Just didn't put the game in his hands. You know, it comes a point sometime where Jack says, hey, we're going to win this thing on defense. But then there will be a game, two, three, how many, and it depends on Derek, where he says, you know what, Derek, go win us this football game. So to me, it's going to be a game-by-game basis. But you know what, Lowe, the good thing about it is I feel that this team can handle that situation now, where in years past, if you said, hey, the last 2 years, hey, Derek, go win the game, you say, hey, I don't know, but I think he has a maturity this year and year three that he can finally do that.
Former NFL linebacker Kirk Morrison joining Chad, Joe, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. Kirk, the Raiders are fortunate. They feel as if they have their quarterback of the future, much like Minnesota feels the same way about Teddy Bridgewater, as you mentioned earlier. But a lot of teams struggle with the position, as it's known as the most difficult position in sports. Some blame college offenses for that problem because they're not pro-style offenses, so these kids aren't necessarily ready for what they're going to face at the next level. But how much do you think the new collective bargaining has stunted the growth of the quarterback position? And what I mean by that is less off-season work with your coaches, less padded practices for such a rigorous, difficult position. The more study time, the better. But since that's been cut back, do you think that is hurting the quarterback position?
No, I don't look at the CBA. I definitely look at college. You know, I mean, that's where I'm at right now. I'm here in Los Angeles for a Pac-12 media days. And, you know, obviously the big talk over here is Josh Rosen, who people have said could have been one of the top quarterbacks drafted last year coming out if he was eligible to come out, but he was only a freshman because he's the most pro-style ready. Because like you mentioned, when you look around college football and talking to Mike Leach, who was one of the coach at Washington State who really talked about that, it's because when you think about the college landscape, and how many times on a Saturday, fellas, that we're watching a football game, the offense comes to the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden, the quarterback hikes his leg up, and the entire offense looks over at the sideline to get a play. And literally, the coaches or the offensive coordinator, head coach, signals a play in, basically telling the quarterback, hey, this is your read. This is where you're going to throw the football. And so I think it takes away from players' development. So if you're a college, you know, quarterback, that development, that process, because when you get to the NFL, if you make it, you have to learn how to call plays in the huddle. You have to learn how to read defenses. You have to do so much. And I think that's why it's difficult for those kind of quarterbacks to transition into the National Football League. That's why it's going to be a transition for Jared Goff. It's going to be a transition for Carson Wentz, only because, you know, they're coming from different schemes, but Carson Wentz a little bit more pro-ready. Same thing Paxton Lynch. So it is a detriment to him sometime in college, but that's the way college is. And it's which guys can come in and change and really show that they can adapt to the NFL system. Look, it took Cam Newton, you know, it didn't take him long. You know, he set, you know, rookie records his rookie year. He tailed off in year two, but now you look at him, he's the MVP of the National Football League. So I think it really varies on each quarterback as they come into the NFL and develop.
It's Kirk Morrison with Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Kirk, it is a franchise tag deadline day. The Broncos and Von Miller continuing their negotiating as they've upped their offer, which includes $70 million in guarantees for Von Miller. If you were John Elway, would you give that much to a non-quarterback?
Well, I can tell you Philadelphia already did, so to Fletcher Cox. So, obviously, this is what you – these are the problems I think that you want to have if you're an organization. When you draft Von Miller, the number two overall, you know, back in that 2011 draft,
yeah,
and all of a sudden he goes out and produces and becomes an all-pro, pro bowler, and a Super Bowl MVP – I mean, this is a problem I think any organization wants to have, that you have that elite player. And he's going to get paid as an elite pass rusher slash outside linebacker. So if you're John Elway, it's, you know you're going to have to kind of pay that king's ransom, because if he doesn't, we know someone else will. And it's very funny that we're talking about Von, because if we look at what he's been able to do throughout his career, and I can only sit back and fast forward to maybe a year or two and think of what the Oakland Raiders are going to have to do for Khalil Mack. We're talking about $70 million guaranteed. By the time Khalil is able to get his deal, we're talking upwards of $80 million that Reggie McKenzie and Jack Del Rio and those guys are going to have to sign that check. So it's a day in which we'll find out, you know, what the Broncos and, you know, also the Kansas City Chiefs with Eric Berry, you know, the other teams around that have that franchise tag out there. But if I'm Khalil Mack, I'm sitting down saying, man, he got 70 in a couple of years.
Let's eat.
I mean, he may get that 80.
Kirk, you're down at Pac-12 Media Day. Who do you think wins the Pac-12 this year, and who's a potential dark horse to emerge and win the Pac-12?
Wow, ooh, potential dark horse. I mean, obviously a lot of people like UCLA, and just because of the quarterback situation, you know, when you have Josh Rosen, a proven guy, and you look around this conference, you don't have that same quarterback that you had a year ago, you know, when you had the Cody Kesslers in there and guys like that from USC. So this year, I think UCLA really is the team that people are really looking at. They're really strong at linebacker. And then sort of my dark horse team, as always, you can never count out those guys down there in Palo Alto. You know what I mean? It's just when you look at the Stanford Cardinal, you know they're going to be coached well. You know they got the best college football player right now and Christian McCaffrey along with Leonard Fournette at UCLA. But I mean, I'm sorry, at LSU. But, you know, that's always my dark horse. I never, when I see a David Shaw coach football team, they're always flying to the radar. And you look at them as the season goes along, you say, they're right there in contention every year. So I feel like Stanford has a dark horse that just comes out of nowhere playing good football, and it's kind of hard to not talk about Christian McCaffrey because he's going to be all over the highlights this year.
He's a former Raider, now with Fox Sports, the NFL on Fox, and Fox Sports Radio. Kirk Morrison with Chad Joe and Lowe on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Kirk, thank you for your time. We look forward to football season. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, yes, indeed, man. See you guys in a couple weeks. I'll be up at Raiders training camp. So good to catch up with you guys.
Let's do it. Let's grab some dinner, bro.
Sounds good, man.
You'll be paying, Kirk, but it does sound good.
I love Kirk. I was living in San Diego when he was at San Diego State. That team sent a lot of guys into the pros. Was it Marlon Underwood, I believe, was a fourth-round corner. Heath Farwell went undrafted but was a special teams ace with Minnesota and with Seattle. So I love the guy, but Stanford is not a dark horse to win the Pac-12.
No.
They're like a favorite. I'll tell you, you want a dark horse? Here's the answer to the question. Washington. Chris Peterson's been there a few years
Washington.
Everyone can talk about UCLA, USC, Stanford, Oregon. Washington is the dark horse to win that conference.
And I hear they're doing a pretty darn good job, Chris Peterson, of recruiting, because before he came in, they had just bolstered the stadium and the all of the assets of the football program. So you're right.
Facilities.
The facilities look incredible. So I think they're on the verge of exploding.
He's a good coach.
I love Chris Peterson.
Yep, he's a good coach. These are all his recruits coming up now. That's the team you want to watch out for. I love Kirk, but that's like, give me a dark horse to win the Super Bowl. You can never
Patriots.
Count out the Patriots. You know, Tom Brady, you can't count him out.
Everyone wants that safe pick, though. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, but I didn't say
I know,
pick the winner.
Dark horse.
You're at Pac-12 Media Day. Throw us a team we might not be paying attention to.
Stanford.
He did say something.
Stanford is not a dark horse.
I'll hit a 3-iron at Stanford right now. I'm well aware of the fact Stanford's going to be a good team.
He did say one thing that I thought
they
was
just won the damn Rose Bowl.
I love Stanford. I can't wait to see the new quarterback, and I hope McCaffrey at least has a chance this year to win the Heisman. Well,
dark horse to win the Heisman, Christian McCaffrey.
Christian
McCaffrey, dark horse to win the Heisman.
He should have won it this year. He's a favorite. Going to be they will not do him wrong.
I just don't want him to get screwed because he plays late games on the
West
Coast.
You don't have to worry about that now
because everyone knows him. You have to worry about, and this happens every single year with the Heisman, some quarterback that no one's talking about now is going to come out of nowhere to light the country on fire. Manziel, how many people talked about Manziel before the season started? Nobody knew who Cam Newton was before the season started.
And then they both beat Bama.
Right. And then you'll have the guys like Geno Smith. 1 month into his last season at West Virginia, Geno Smith was the runaway Heisman favorite, and he was going to be the number one overall pick. Then he got into the meat of the schedule, and he crapped himself.
Crapped hard.
I just got a text from Kirk Morrison. Kirk says his dark horse for the SEC, Bama.
Yeah. Look out for Bama and look out for Ohio State. Urban Meyer can do some coaching.
I like Kurt.
I've always been a fan of Kirk. I watch him at San Diego State. How many people can say that?
That's true.
I was living there. I love watching him at San Diego State. But come on, man.
Michigan, baby. Hardball.
I think that's another dark horse.
That's my dark horse.
Michigan could win 5 games this year.
Purdue is my dark horse.
Whoa. Now, you really went out on a limb there.
They literally have the worst odds to win the Big Ten. They literally do. I saw it the other day. Literally have the worst.
If you're listening to this, they're giving you a cheap shot.
I'll tell you a program that no one ever talks about.
Your team sucks,
this is a program that's never achieved anything, but they're kind of on the rise. Texas. No one knows about this school. They're called Texas, the Longhorns.
You
they might be okay.
Charlie.
Texas is okay. It's Charlie Strong that I'm worried about.
Charlie's a good coach. Watch out for them. Within the next 3 years, they're going to be in the Final Four, without question. I would bet that right now. This season, the following season, or the next season.
How do you like that? You don't like little man?
One of those three seasons.
I agree with
Lowe's
you.
Lowe's implying you don't like him because he's black. Is that true?
No, I'd say little man because he's short in stature.
No, that's not what you're saying.
He stands on a little every time he does. It's so cute. He stands on a little box when he does his little press conferences. It's interesting.
Charlie Strong really short.
Yeah,
that's true.
Absolutely.
Can we get our crack research team on that?
They're not. Yeah.
Here's a dark horse. The crack research team coming up with some analysis.
Is Strong taller than you?
No. What are you trying to say? I'm taller than you.
No, you're not. You're under 6 feet, brah.
What are you actually?
5'11".
That's who you are?
Yeah.
Is that tall or wide? Yeah.
I'm a partner. That was a cheap shot.
Lo Neal, underrated fullback. Here's a fullback you might want to look at as one of the all-time greats, Lo Neal. No one's ever talking about him. Yeah, 16 years, all those consecutive games, 4 Pro Bowls.
Was Kasim in college when you were there?
Hey, look out for the Warriors this year, by the way, in basketball. No one's really talking about him. Golden State might make the playoffs, make a little noise.
Wow.
Simmons is my dark horse for rookie of the year in the NBA, by the way.
Oh, my God. Here's a picture of Charlie Strong. Forget about that Texas prediction. Standing on a stool.
I told you.
That's like the type of thing you would use when you're dropping deuce in the morning.
Tattoo.
To straighten your back so you have a better bowel movement.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks.
That's the stool that my nanny uses to get the all brand out of the cupboard.
See, you guys are always doubting your boy Lowe. I'm watching this guy get a stool to do his press conference. Like, oh, my God.
No, that just means that you would, if you had press conferences every week, you would probably have to get the nanny stool.
Go to hell, Chad.
I'm just saying.
That's not true.
One other thing, though. If you want a dark horse, Phil Mickelson might win the British Open.
You're on fire this morning.
I can't believe that. You're on fire. Hot takes. Come on, Kirk.
Big thanks to Kirk Morrison. And in case you missed it, his dark horse for the Pac-12 is Stanford.
Yeah. He's got the Blackhawks in the NHL, too.
Bullpen or outfield, what do the San Francisco Giants need more as we get ready for the second half? 7:45, Chad, Joe, and Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
Ace reliever Sean Doolittle joins us coming up in studio at 9 to preview the second half of the season for the A's. Now, back to Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
.748, a little music from The Matrix. We're going to be talking some movies throughout the day as we right in the heart of the summertime movie madness.
I love this trilogy.
I loved it too.
I know a lot of people did not. I thought the first one blew my mind because it was such an original concept. I thought the second one came back strong. Third one, it wasn't great, but it still, you know, it was good enough for me. It was worth the price of admission. I know a lot of people don't feel that way, but I love this trilogy.
I love Matrix.
The first one blew my mind. Aww. Like, those are the movies I'm interested in. Original concepts that make you think, that blow your mind. Matrix, Inception. Yeah.
Inception's in my top five. Me too.
Neil.
Like, that movie twisted me up bad.
Fight Club.
Fight Club's really good.
My best line in that movie, Neil in my hand, I have a blue pill.
Oh, you're talking about Neil.
Yeah. Neil, yeah.
Okay.
You pick the red pill or the blue pill. You go down this red pill, though, Neil, you go down this rabbit hole, and it's no return. You pick.
Now I really want to watch the movie.
That's
again.
A Morris Fish. He was so good in this. Morphius. Great movie.
I want to watch it again.
Yeah. I'm going to have to watch it tonight.
Yeah, right?
I can watch that all. Yeah.
Oh. I forgot to bring this up earlier. I got to derail this for 1 second. Mind blown yesterday, boys. Mind blown.
You missed us, huh?
Yesterday. Oh, yeah. That's why I had to tell you this. Anna was a part of this, too. So yesterday, when I was filling in for Haberman and Middlecoff, we did a concept all throughout the day. Greatest sports video games ever. A lot of stuff's getting thrown around. Tony Hawk comes on for the interview. The guy was awesome. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out obviously gets brought up.
Sure.
It's a top five for me. A lot of people enjoyed it. Doesn't matter where you sit on it, but we all know the game. Tyson, very difficult to knock out.
No question.
We get a caller who says that there is a bar in town called Soda Popinski's, which is named after one of the characters. They have a Nintendo there. You go there and you knock out Tyson. You don't have to go all the way through. They'll put the cheat code in. If you knock out Tyson, free bottle of champagne.
Wow.
Why don't we head over there
with Joe since he's got...
I got to train first. You got to get the sequence down. Tyson's a sequence and you've got to learn it and memorize it and then you can knock him out. I can't just show up there today. I have to go back and I have to train.
Okay.
Like Neo had to train before he was able
to
take on Smith.
He doesn't want to embarrass himself, basically.
Yeah. I mean, Tyson would knock me out in 10 seconds right now. That would be a big problem for me.
Okay.
I'm not going to get the free bottle of champagne in that move, but I go do some training, we'll be able to knock him out.
Now, if you finish Contra, do you get like a rack of beer or anything like that?
Not that I know of, but if you could finish Contra on 3 lives, that's probably got to be worth something.
Yeah.
I've never done that. I've only finished it on the 30 lives. The spray gun was the one that fired out like the 6 cannonballs in all directions.
The spray gun is while I was able to do it once without dying.
Yeah. Yes. That's the gun.
We got to go check that out. That actually sounds like a good time.
No. Sounds awesome.
This is the creepy part that gets you excited for the movie right here. Oh, yeah.
That chills
down the spine. And then the movie jumps right into a sequence.
I feel like someone's staring at me right now.
Yeah. This screwed me up, man.
Phenomenal, man.
Who did the music for this? I got to find out.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, they did great.
This movie's awesome. Well, yeah. Especially when he's in the fight and all those guys keep coming. And all of a sudden he concentrates and he starts slowing down. And just.
My God, how far is this going to go? If this is going to be the movie, let's just shut up and listen to the movie.
You weren't supposed to relieve me.
Put it on.
Oh, my God.
But I felt like taking a shift. You like him, don't you? You like watching him. Don't be ridiculous. We're going to kill him. You understand that?
Yes!
Do you? It doesn't matter what I believe.
Okay, if we keep doing this, we'll get fired. Go ahead and cut. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate that.
Eventually, we're going to get
plans
fired.
For tonight. It's movie time. And did you play Nintendo?
No, I got plans for tonight. Anyway, Widespread Panic, Fox Theater tonight. Get tuned up, baby. Second night of 2 nights, and it's the end of the tour. They're gonna let it loose. Why does everyone give me that look? It's gonna be a fun show.
Head over there, Anna.
I will be going out of town actually this weekend, heading up Pine Mountain Lake.
Well, that should be some fun too.
Yeah, it should be good times.
Where's that?
Kind of near Sonora.
Where's that?
120 and I don't know. How do I explain that? A few hours away. So, I mean,
it's
which way is that?
The wine country, right?
Yeah,
kind of. End up that way.
Just,
keep
you know
going.
What? No, next time, just say north
highway
or
five,
west or whatever.
I don't know. Just that way.
No, I'm with you on that, Joe. It's like when you're still getting used to certain areas and then you ask someone a question, it's like sometimes you need more gaps.
Oh, even if I'm at a place 20 years, I'm just not going to. I don't pay attention to the roads. I lean on technology, so I'm not memorizing street names or turns. So every single time I head to the same place, I need to be relying upon technology.
An hour out of Yosemite, probably around that way.
You see, like that right there.
That helped. I'm trying to think of like a bigger location.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in regards to your video game discussion, Joe, what sports video game came through number one? All time.
You know what? There was no consensus opinion. There were so many calls and texts. It was everywhere. Everyone had a different opinion. I ranked them the Tecmo Bowl, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. It was NHL 94 was fourth. NBA Jam was fifth. I can't remember what was third. Punch-Out was third. So it was Tecmo Bowl, Tony Hawk, Punch-Out, NHL 94, NBA Jam.
So you got me thinking about that. My initial thought was to jump on Tecmo Bowl because I loved it like everyone else did and Bo Jackson and all that stuff. But I got to thinking about it. I was like, the NCAA football, where you could go in and create your dynasties.
Yeah.
I've spent more time playing that game than any other sports game. And I enjoy it. That's my favorite.
It's a shame EA had to get rid of it because all of the player likenesses. Couldn't figure out a way to let the players share in the money, so we just had to get rid of the game.
Some big news yesterday out of Nintendo. They are going to be releasing a mini console, which like fits in the size of your hand. And according to the text line, it said that it's going to be released November 11th.
And they'll have access to all the games?
Yeah,
30
I guess
preloaded
awesome.
Games.
Yeah.
30. That's the key.
A lot of the big ones.
We'll see.
No Donkey Kong's on there. Love Donkey Kong.
Is Pitfall on? Because that's Guru's favorite sports game.
I love Pitfall.
He says.
One of the things I want more than anything, my buddy Scott has got a basement where he's got a bunch of old 80s arcade games in it. So you walk down, you flip
like
one
the
switch.
Big physical, actual.
Yeah, his wife let him fill up the basement with a bunch. He went to the mall when they were closing down the old arcade to open up one of the new ones, and he bought all their video games 25 cents on the dollar. Well, they had this microchip where you can get the console, and you put in the microchip, and it's got all the 80s video games right there on one console. If I had the room, I would have him build me one out, and then I would just sit there and I could game all day when I've got nothing better to do. Isn't that incredible?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Like your own room. Would your wife let you pull that one off, Lo?
Absolutely.
Do you have any sort of game room? Do you have pool or anything at the house?
No, game room, but it's don't have any necessary pool table and stuff. It's just kind of my little sports room, but we play card games and, you know, Bones. I got a table and stuff
Bones.
In there. Yeah, sort of games.
Bones you can do out in the back alley.
Yeah, that's
do
true.
Do you like pool?
I'm not good at it. No, that's a game. I'm terrible at that. I'm good at darts. I'm great at shuffleboard. You want to get into a shuffleboard game? Let's go somewhere. I'll take everyone's money. But if we play pool, I'm worthless. I'm dead weight.
I suck at shuffleboard. I've tried it. I haven't played it enough to get the feel for it yet.
Yeah, you don't want to deal with me there.
You got mad game.
The game's tight
on the shuffleboard.
Shuffleboard game's tight. Darts game is tight. Pool game is crap. Ping pong is crap to mediocre.
I'm just blanking on the game with the beanbags. Cornhole. That was fun.
Depends on where you're from. Cornhole or bags?
Bags?
Yeah, some people just call it bags.
In Oklahoma, they call it cornhole.
Okay.
That's a fun game, too.
Cornhole's fun.
We used to play that out at the track at Portland Meadows on Kentucky Derby Day. They'd have a big whole cornhole deal set up. I've got mad game when it comes to that.
Cornhole?
Yeah.
It's great to bag, throw it.
It's fun to play it in the sand when you're in your feet, sand underneath your feet. We played a lot at the beach when we're down there in Tampa. Mike's little tournaments. He has actually a cornhole tournament. It's a lot of fun.
You're talking about Allstott.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Joe, thank you for this video game detour.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. It was great.
I'm talking game. I can't get enough of it.
Lo was talking about rabbit holes earlier. You can really go down the rabbit hole with that conversation. I mean, that video game thing, that'll take you somewhere.
It's amazing how you look back on your life. You're like, I've spent a lot of time, invested a lot of time and energy into video gaming. It happens.
Oh, yeah. Now this Nintendo thing's got me all screwed up, too, so I got to get back to work on Tyson so I can get the free bottle of champagne.
Second half of the baseball season will kick off tonight. What do the Giants need to keep pace? They got the best record in baseball right now. It's money time. 757 Chad Jones Low, 95.7 The Game.